that's the way it's working. If one does not understand racism, classism, white privilege, terrorism, and the war on drugs, what these concepts mean and how these terms work, then everything else you do understand will only confuse you.
Green Party candidate for governor of Connecticut, Cliff Thornton. That's it for Sprouts, a weekly program distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact Air Traffic Controller Ursula Rudenberg at ursula@pacifica.org. I'm your producer and host, Dori Smith. See you next week on Sprouts. 101 FM.
Free Radio Santa Cruz. And welcome now to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, it's August 17th, 2006. Stay tuned.
Pat you down so good you think you'll get a hand job, and you
welcome to another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and this, of course, is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, and freakradio.org. For the next 2 hours, you get my opinions, I get your opinions, and I try to focus on the local scene, civil rights-wise and civil wrongs-wise, and I guess a couple of issues that have come up recently that came to my attention, which I posted an article about on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, also known as Santa Cruz Indie Media. Again, that's indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, one word, small letters. It's a useful website for some kinds of issues. I post on it quite regularly. And I'm concerned about, in this case, the reappearance of the persecution of Roger Minch, who is a medical marijuana provider who was arrested, tried, and convicted a year and a half ago, nearly a year and a half ago, year and a quarter ago, for operating the Hemporium up in Felton. And I guess what really concerns me is he was rearrested in August, even though he was given a probation condition and he was also appealing his sentence. He was convicted of felony sales of marijuana, felony cultivation. And what was the nature of the felony? Well, I'm still kind of probing the files in the county building to get the details. But he was told by Judge Stevens that, and the files reflect this, that he would be allowed to continue to sell medical marijuana to qualified medical marijuana patients. Yet, 3 months later, in August of 2005, he was rearrested. And for the last year, the trial, the whole case has been dragging on. Defense attorney Ben Rice has taken his case. It's been moved at the DA's behest out of the court of Judge Stevens into the court of Judge Almquist. And it's, again, I'm still just scratching the surface of this case. You can read my thoughts, again, if you go to the indiebay.org/website, and I'll be talking about it here. There was a forum today downtown, I should say on the fifth floor of the county building, which I did not get to, but hope that others did and hope was recorded, about medical marijuana generally, with one of the prime speakers being Ben Rice, attorney for Roger Minch. So if anybody got to that forum and asked a few serious questions, like why the hell has this case been kept under the radar for the last 9 months, I guess in the hope that the DA would see the light. That's DA Bob, he's so liberal, Lee. You remember him, the tall, handsome guy in the suit. Why did he go after Minch in the first place? We don't know. Now he's gone after him again. I suspect it's kind of the sort of robotic routine procedure where they have to spend the money coming in for the marijuana enforcement team, the MET team, which funds both DAs and sheriffs to go after marijuana, even medical marijuana. And so we have this continued persecution. I'm going to read you some of the facts from the case as outlined by attorney Ben Rice's, I think it's August or September or October 2005, declaration to the court. I'm not sure if I want to do it right away or wait a bit. I'm a little bit scattered in a certain sense, because I'd hope to get my, I normally have a listing of things I'm doing on the show, and for some reason that listing has not appeared on my email, and I'm still scampering and hoping to recover it, but that may not happen, so you may see me at my wit's end. Also, the guest I'd hoped for this show, a man tasered by the deputy sheriffs in custody 1 week before the death a year ago of David Anthony Cross, by tasering in custody by Sheriff Robbins' deputies, has unfortunately not shown up, so I'm hoping we can secure him again on Sunday. We have been in touch by phone, so I'm not sure what's cooking with that. And I'm also going to be having on Sunday, I'm going to play a somewhat withheld for a four-week interview with a man who was assaulted by a sheriff's deputy in Davenport, which may not be that unusual, although I've never been assaulted by sheriff's deputies, only by Lieutenant Steve Clark. And that was, of course, at city council meeting on June 14th a year ago. But others have had problems with deputies big time. And the interesting thing about this case is that I'm concerned about a collusion under color of law, a conspiracy, you might say, and it's a word I don't use much in my broadcasts, to Well, what, to punish under color of law, to deprive an individual of civil rights under color of law, to use the sheriff's organization to go after a homeless-looking person who is in fact homeless, terrorize them, physically abuse them, falsely arrest them, and in order to get rid of them. And I'm going to play that interview on Sunday, assuming that I don't lose it, and assuming that I'm still around. And assuming the station is still around, we can always use your help here, you know, with the station activity, both in terms of funding and equipment and suggestions and even new broadcasters. I'm hoping that folks who like my show, if you like this show, which happens every Thursday evening, of course, and every Sunday morning, 9:30 to 1, you'll consider, picking up the subject matter yourself and applying for a spot. You know, part of the show could be available for somebody who wants to do interviews with people on the streets around issues of poverty and police misconduct. That's, I think, something we need to have here in Santa Cruz. You know, and my voice, while it's a fine voice and a great voice and a baritone, or is it a tenor? I'm not sure. But anyway, it's a good voice. It ain't the only voice around, and hopefully there are other voices that can, you know, speak up too and do so more regularly and in a more organized fashion. I'm, of course, pretty much very makeshift in the way I proceed with this program. I envy people like Skidmark Bob and the V-Man and others who are able to who really organize their shows well. And I'm leaving out a lot of people. I mentioned some old timers whose shows I've occasionally tuned into. I edit in the studio and I kind of proceed to kind of give you a lot of rough and raw stuff. And hopefully there's some pearls amidst all the swine there, or amidst all the sand and all the clams and all the oysters. If you want to be a part of the show, of course, if you want to help out Free Radio, you can give a call to our off-air line, our voicemail, 427-4523, 427-4523. Again, looking for donations of equipment, of money, your own PSAs, public service announcements, if you have them. Criticism, commentary, you've got questions, happy to answer them. You can also go online, freakradio.org, one word, small letters, freak, F-R-E-A-K, radio.org. You can also mail in your $1,000 checks to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. Again, P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. If you want to catch me off air, the number to call is 423-4833, 423-HUFF. H-U-F-F. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, not a form of drug inhalation, rather. It's actually an organization. We meet every Wednesday at 9:30 to 11:30 in the county building, actually in the breezeway between the county building and the courthouse, and we concern ourselves with a wide variety of issues, but most of them concerning folks who are poor, people who are being evicted, folks who are going to court for bogus charges, institutional harassment of poor people around bad laws like the sleeping ban, the city's municipal code 6.36010, which criminalizes poor people simply for the act of sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. Can you believe it? Now, I've been in touch with the local ACLU's Drug Policy Project. That's actually a project that controls a lot of offices. I mean, it almost takes up a whole floor at the corner of Pacific and Cathcart, right above the Taqueria Vallarta, in case you wish to go in and volunteer or grill them or get information from them or offer your commendation to them. I've been a pretty strong critic of the local ACLU and the national ACLU as it relates to do-nothing behavior in Santa Cruz around the drug war and around a lot of other local civil liberties issues, which the sleeping ban, which I just mentioned, is one of the most obvious. The local ACLU has not taken a position on the sleeping ban, if you can believe it. It has been brought to the ACLU numerous times. It's been brought to it again recently, and they just won't take a position on it. Now, the national ACLU, I should say the state ACLU, actually, down in L.A., they're at Southern California ACLU, has actually been instrumental in filing a suit that challenged a Los Angeles law that made it illegal to sit, lie, or sleep throughout Los Angeles 24 hours a day. In the so-called Jones case, which I've talked about on the air, the ACLU got a three-judge federal court panel, U.S., I guess the Ninth Circuit, to send back to the to a local judge demand and require that judge to consider an injunction, a ban on police arrests under this law for at least homeless people in the Skid Row area, which is an area of Los Angeles down. I'm not sure how many blocks it contains. I think it's, is it 20? Is it 200? It's a bunch of blocks in the downtown L.A. area. And between the hours of, I think it's 9:30 and 6 or 6:30 and 9, or 9 and 6:30, it's the nighttime hours in Los Angeles. Unless they can offer shelter to people, they can't arrest them for falling asleep, sitting, or lying down in those areas of town. That's the Jones decision. And that decision was put on hold when it was appealed by the L.A. City Council a couple months ago. And its status is still a little unclear, but there has been some movement. And I was, as I say, pleased when I contacted the ACLU's drug policy project, which is, you might say, what does drug policy project have to do with civil rights for poor people in Los Angeles? Well, there's no direct connection, but this actually is a high-powered office with numerous attorneys and a lot of workers, and a lot of money goes into that ACLU office. And it's not really the local ACLU. It's the national ACLU that's set up there. And I was fortunate enough to get a quick response from one of the workers there who called me back straight away. And then when I called her back to get some kind of to clarify some of the concerns, she responded again very quickly. And there is a she referred me to an article in the Los Angeles Times, which is a sort of a woe is me, the police are being handcuffed type article, but it does provide some new information on what's happening with the LAPD in Los Angeles and homeless people. I'm going to read it here now, and I've also sent it out to the Huff email list. You can get on the Huff email list if you're interested. Just go to the Huff website, which is HUFF Santa Cruz, huffsantacruz.org, and you'll find instructions on how to get on the email list, and we will send you the periodic bulletin, both about local demonstrations and also breaking events statewide and nationally that concern civil rights for homeless people. The article is from the L.A. Times, today's L.A. Times. LAPD's crime offensive on Skid Row is slipping. Arrests have fallen while homeless camps have grown. The addition of 50 officers is delayed, by Cara Mia DiMassa and Richard Winton, L.A. Times staff writers, again, August 17th. The LAPD's much-heralded crackdown on crime on downtown Los Angeles' Skid Row is showing signs of faltering, with arrests plummeting and a new police survey showing a threefold increase in the number of homeless encampments in the district. Top LAPD officials acknowledged Wednesday that their campaign has slowed, saying officers have been stymied by a lack of staffing and by an American Civil Liberties Union lawsuit that severely limits their ability to arrest people for sleeping on the streets. Also for breathing on the streets. Another problem with those homeless people, they tend to, you know, take up the oxygen as well. Can you imagine? My, of course, side comment, which isn't a part of this LA Times story. Continuing with the story, the officers are not only handcuffed, they are hobbled, said Police Chief William J. Bratton. Officers have also halted catch and release practices, in which they arrest people on the street for minor offenses and order them to court instead of sending them to jail. And that's actually, I think that's what we would call an infraction ticket, a non-custodial arrest in Santa Cruz. Like if they see you and you're a poor person with your dog on Pacific Avenue, it's wham, bam, a ticket for $100 to $200. But you don't have to go you don't get incarcerated immediately for it. You simply get a citation which requires you to, within a month, go to court and get a court date. Similarly, a sleeping ban ticket in Santa Cruz is an infraction. You're not allowed to have a public defender. You're not allowed to have a jury trial, but you don't immediately go to jail for it. And in theory, you don't have to go to jail. You simply have to spend $25 to $100 and do 8 hours of community service, assuming the judge reads the law. Unlike one of the late judges or referee Kim Basket, who failed to read the law and used to assign people more community service time than was allowed under the law, and of course, this kind of criminal behavior by officers of the court, doesn't elicit any kind of sanction. The people don't get restitution for the time they've lost or the money they've lost. And it's only when you shout loudly about these issues, as I was doing in the basement of the county building, not actually screaming, but persistently demanding that there be some changes, that eventually they adjust to what the cruel law itself says. I mean, that's the cruel law is bad enough that homeless people are not allowed to sleep in the Santa Cruz City area after 11 o'clock at night, even though there's space tonight for only 40 of the 1,500 to 2,000 people who are in the city limits area without shelter outside. But to have the judges make it worse by imposing additional penalties or ignoring the law, although it has been standard practice in Santa Cruz, is even harder to believe. But down in L.A., the police are complaining that they've had to halt the catch-and-release practices. And they caught them sleeping, but they have to let them go, you know. In which they arrest people on the street for minor offenses and order them to court instead of sending them to jail. The LAPD ceased such actions because the city attorney's office said prosecutors had trouble filing charges against the defendants. And, of course, the reason they had trouble filing charges was because the law was found to be unenforceable by the federal courts way back in April. And probably for other reasons, too. Again, I'm going to try to get some clarification on this story. The police department promised last fall would add 50 officers to the Central Division's 318 sworn personnel downtown, but the officers' arrival has been delayed repeatedly as officials squabbled over how they would be used. And we know the best use, of course, of LAPD people is to run around harassing and arresting homeless people for sleeping. I mean, that's sensible use of the police, right? On Wednesday, Chief Bratton said he hasn't assigned the 50 officers yet, in part because it is not clear they would make a difference in fighting crime, by which he means sleep crime, with the ACLU lawsuit unresolved. Turi Osborne, the mayor's point person on homelessness, said she expects the officers to arrive in September and stay in the district 4 months. The sleep busters are coming in September, folks. Another issue stirring concerns about the cleanup effort is an LAPD census of the homeless population completed last week that found 539 tents on the streets of the district. That's an increase from the 187 tents found in February. The census also concludes that Skid Row's homeless population has risen about 10%. I guess Mike Rotkin will now claim that there is a magnet effect. More tents and a 10% increase in population with sleeping ban. It's not actually been lifted because it's still on appeal, but the police are probably nervous about enforcing it. That's what I take from these figures. Bratton is a 10% increase in the homeless is not millions of people will come to Santa Cruz or, you know, huge amounts of people are going to come. 10% increase in Santa Cruz would mean another 100 or so people came to Santa Cruz. Or it suddenly became visible in Santa Cruz. Or came to the areas where it is legal to sleep, the Skid Row area, from other parts of the city in L.A., as, for example, they did in 2000 in Santa Cruz, when for a brief time it wasn't actually legal, but the police misinformed people that it was legal to sleep in the safe sleeping zones which were proposed by Fitzmaurice, Sugar and Crone, and Byers, and then abandoned by Byers at 1:30 in the morning in June of 2000. That was another one of those occasions when I was escorted from the city chambers after I noted Mayor Sugar kept interrupting activist Becky Johnson, as she was one of the few people present to keep asking questions and during her time at the microphone. Anyway, returning to the L.A. story, and it's found there's been an increase in tents, 539 tents, increase from 187. Now, you know, in a sane society, you would say that the authorities would thank homeless people and the tent providers, whoever they are, for assisting the city in finding emergency shelter for homeless people so that, for example, they don't take up more money for emergency services, so they don't engage in costly lawsuits against the city, so that they don't, you know, die and their rotting bodies start stinking up the streets and disturbing the tourists. But this is Los Angeles, and, of course, this is the United States, and this is 2006, so we have no such rational perspective in mind. You know, we have war criminals running wars in Iraq and Lebanon, and we have, of course, war criminals in power in Washington, and then we have, you know, war criminals waiting in the wings in the Democratic Party to take over when the Republican war criminals cycle out. So it's a real problem. In Santa Cruz, we have a similar situation. We have a city council election coming up where the same people who engage in systematic human rights violations under their mayorships, Rotkin and Matthews, are running for re-election and, you know, have no shame or embarrassment about they're supporting laws that criminalize the homeless, that make it illegal to read a book in your car for 20 minutes in a parking garage, that give absolute power to the head of Parks and Rec to start declaring when you may or may not, for example, walk into the city council grounds. If you're, I don't know, if you're doing a picket, maybe you're sitting there, they can establish closing hours without any kind of public input or process. I guess the public input is required, but no public vote is required. You have a situation, these are people who have never denied a police department request that I know about in terms of funding. Maybe Mike Rockin will correct me on that. And, of course, who have rubber-stamped the city attorney who has wasted hundreds of thousands of dollars of city money, lost rent control for the De Anza seniors and Clearview Court vehicle dwellers. They're folks who live in their trailers. I guess there's a better word for it. We don't want to call our local folks trailer trash. They're low-income folks in trailers. And, you know, they were going to have they had rent control ripped out from under them by the Rotkin City Council. And they were going to have their entire area ripped out from under them by the Coast Santa Cruz Hotel development project, which went south when neighbors didn't like it either. So, you know, that was a problem. But again, we have a situation both in Los Angeles and in Washington, D.C. and in Santa Cruz where people, the real issues aren't even up for discussion. The real issues aren't something we talk about except on these teeny tiny radio stations such as the one you're listening to now. The real issues about basic human rights for everybody of the most elementary sort, like the right to sleep at night legally, don't get into the public dialogue. Rotkin is not going to be talking about that. He will give you a patter in the next 4 months as he runs for city council, if the issue is raised at all, about how we have, you know, our laws are just as good as any other city. We treat our colors just as good as all the rest of them cities, you know, and that the police only enforce on complaint and that there's no real problem and that only protesters have problems. Even though you have a huge, massive increase, a rape increase in the Santa Cruz area, which affects homeless women as well as women in houses, and who knows, some men too, probably, though I haven't heard of men being raped in Santa Cruz. That happens once our drug laws put them in jail, of course, under Bob Lee, and without any protest from Mike Rotkin, who, though he did send a letter around the issue of Roger Minch, who I mentioned earlier in the show, the guy who headed the Emporium and is now facing a second round of prosecutions. He sent a letter to the judge saying, you know, please be, you know, merciful with this fellow. And even though Rotkin, after 5 years of stonewalling, allowed the first marijuana club to open in 5 years, the Greenway Club, and did support a second club this year, he has declined to, for example, come out publicly to support tax and regulate marijuana, make marijuana the lowest enforcement priority, really deal in any kind of proactive, educational, leadership fashion with the drug war in Santa Cruz. You know, it's not something he's willing to stick his neck out on, or Matthews either. In fact, they're a part of the status quo on this issue. Continuing with the LAPD story, and you're going to find these interruptions that I make will be frequent in this kind of show, but you can make interruptions too. You can call in 427-3772. Again, in L.A., Chief Bratton is a longtime advocate, that's Police Chief Bratton, of the broken windows method of policing. Now, with that, some of you may not know what the broken windows method is. It comes out of a conservative think tank from the early 80s based on an Atlantic Monthly article. And it says the reason you have to make sure that homeless people don't have the right to sleep or even congregate or gather, set up tents and so forth, is because that produces a so-called broken window effect, which means they are like a broken window. The human survival can be equated to destruction of property. And having a person, you know, sitting on the street begging or sitting on the street or lying on the street sleeping will encourage other crime to occur. One broken window prompts others. That's the not just absurd, but invidious theory under which a lot of cities, large cities, are operating, and Santa Cruz is one of them. If you look in the police manual, you'll find that former police chief Belcher described his policing that way, too. It doesn't say much for basic civil rights for the entire community. It doesn't say much for the sensible reality that there is a street life, which is very important actually to the safety of a community. I'm finding out more about this as I read a book called Sidewalk, which I recommend to folks. Maybe I can find an audio book version of it and play it on free radio during one of my future shows. It's in the library, Sidewalk, it's called. It's about sidewalk culture in New York City and how it actually produces a sense of safety and security in the community through having a sidewalk community, through having more eyes on the street, which is exactly what Matt Farrell, the head of the parking authority, the redevelopment agency, Seal Cirillo, Parks and Recreation, Zarina Dennett, Shoemaker, council members Rotkin, Ryan Coonerty, Cynthia Matthews, and others are eliminating with such things as the parking garage paranoia law, which makes it not just eliminates your right to sit in your own car for 20 minutes and read a book, even if you paid to be there, but it eliminates your right to feel protected because other people are allowed to be there too. Instead, all you have are the people who are the occasional police force that may or may not occasionally come through, and people who are rushing in and out in their cars, aren't spending much time there. And then, of course, there are those who are specifically there for criminal activities like vandalism and burglary, who are probably going to be planning their activities around the law. And that law, of course, really is going after the same people that are being gone after in L.A., mentioned in this article in the L.A. Times that I'm taking 20 minutes to get through, homeless people, because that's what the real deal is about the attack in the parking garage structures on your right to simply use them as ordinary public spaces and engage in innocent behavior there. Your right to innocent behavior has to end because the police want more power to eliminate the homeless presence. They already have laws that make it illegal to sleep at night. They already have laws that make it illegal to cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night. That's 6.36010B for all you legal fans. You know, they have all kinds of laws. They have laws against loitering with intent to sell drugs. You know, all the loitering laws were thrown out. We thought, oh no, they came back in the mid-90s. If they can hook it up with the drug war, then they can get it past the courts. And there is such a law in Santa Cruz. I haven't really closely followed the details of it. It isn't used a lot, but it's used occasionally. I've seen it. They have a lot of laws they can use, and now they have a lot more. And that's because of our city council and our city manager and the police state mentality that is becoming second nature. It's not just Bush. It's not just the state officials. It's the local officials. And actually, it's here that we can actually do something about it. It's here that we need to raise our voices, if anywhere. In case you want to raise your voice tonight, you can call the city council at 420-5020. 420-5020, and you can say to what's up to with Mayor Matthews and Shadow Mayor Rotkin, who are the deadly duo that are running for re-election in this November race. Again, going back to Los Angeles, Police Chief Bratton in Los Angeles is a longtime advocate of the broken windows method of policing and said last year that he planned to employ the strategy, aggressively focusing on smaller crimes such as prostitution and drug possession, to prevent larger crimes on Skid Row. So the theory that prostitution and drug use creates larger crimes, of course, it's horseshit. I mean, there are obviously going to be crimes involved in both those activities, particularly since they're illegal, and the police department supports their being illegal. But the idea that these are necessarily a part of a larger, prompt larger crimes is ridiculous. Usually, that would mean more arrests, but LAPD data suggests that that is not what's happening. The Central Division has made about 7,000 arrests so far this year. During the same period in 2005 and 2004, there were more than 9,000 arrests, 2,000 more, the department reported. The 23% drop comes at a time when arrests in the city as a whole are flat. Gee, we aren't having more arrests in this area for drug use and prostitution. Oh, dear. But LAPD data suggests that is not what's happening. The biggest decline in Skid Row arrests has been for misdemeanor offenses such as trespassing and possession of small quantities of drugs, the very, quote, quality of life crimes Police Chief Bratton vowed to focus on. Those are the kind of crimes that Community Service Officer Pam Bechtel, the chunky officer in light blue, nothing wrong with being chunky, by the way, I'm chunky myself, it's being chunky and then harassing poor people and sending them to court and taking away their money and liberty and also destroying one's rights of people in public spaces. That is the criminal behavior that this officer is engaged in. And she's not the only one, but she makes a virtue out of it. She really is zealous about it. And so I continue to mention her and continue to get bad reports about her. The biggest decline in Skid Row arrests, as I mentioned, has been for misdemeanor offenses. Crime has dropped 16% so far this year in the Central Division, which covers most of the downtown as well as Chinatown. But both Bratton and Central Division Captain Andrew Smith said they believe violent crime actually has risen slightly this year on Skid Row. Increasingly concerned by what they consider the slow pace of promised improvements for the district. Again, improvements is more arrests for sleeping, more arrests for drug possession, more arrests for prosecution. Not necessarily more arrests for violent crime. I'm not picking that up from this story. A group of downtown business leaders, residents, and at least one service provider met recently with Mayor Villaraigosa to discuss the situation. Police officials explained the decline in arrests as the consequence of a series of events that have unfolded in the last few months. In April, a decision by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals blocked the department from arresting people for sitting, sleeping, or lying on public sidewalks. Actually, it only blocked them from doing it at night and from doing it in the Skid Row area. The LAPD had allowed such activity at night as long as people were packed up by morning. Now, this is an interesting claim. I had heard that the Los Angeles police, due to pressure from the ACLU and other groups in the early 3 or 4 years ago, were in fact being forced to lay off homeless people at night for sleeping. But this apparently is not really the case because Jones and five others, and apparently ACLU has found other cases too, were arrested in 2003 for this kind of behavior, sleeping. Not for not packing up by morning, but for sleeping at night during these periods of time, the nighttime hours. So the LA Times may have it wrong, or maybe the police changed their policies. I'm looking, of course, for new information. But there does seem to have been a distinctive, the police are complaining that this ACLU lawsuit successfully waged at least as far as the Ninth Circuit Court is having an impact on their ability to harass the Skid Row population, which of course is not how they're putting it, the crime. Their arrests are down, you know, isn't that too bad? The ACLU, which brought the suit, argued the police were criminalizing homeless people simply for being homeless. No. The department said the decision took away the most effective weapon here in Santa Cruz, we like to call it, tool. That's the favorite phrase of Deputy Chief Vogel or staff members in the city and city council members who support increased police powers in Santa Cruz. It's always a useful tool. We need a useful tool. The 15-minute parking garage paranoia law is a useful tool. By the way, got a message from Matt Farrell today on the phone. He's the parking lot czar. I was wondering when is there actually going to begin enforcement of this read a book for 20 minutes, get a $150 citation law? When's that going to go into effect? You know, linger with your grandmother at the car for more than 15 minutes, get a citation. Walk into a parking lot and try to put a leaflet on a vehicle if you don't have a car there, get a citation. When's that going to go into effect? And Matt told me that probably sometime in mid to late September, once they figure out how they're going to get around the ACLU lawsuit, which hasn't been filed and which hasn't even been proposed. I'm thinking optimistically here, extremely optimistically, because on the board of the ACLU is Mike Rotkin, who voted for this law, and Sheila Coonerty, the supervisor's sister, Neil Coonerty's sister, who also, as a head of the Downtown Commission, and she's also the co-chair of the ACLU board, also voted for this law when it was in committee with reservations, but she voted for it. So I don't know if the ACLU is going to do diddly squat on this, but there is a part of the law that says you have to allow people some ability to engage in free speech activity, like leave a leaflet or something, and because it's a public area. And it's open to the public who are people are using cars, so you're going to close it off to everyone else. You know, it doesn't quite work. I mean, one of the things Ryan Coonerty said when he was arguing for this law, he's a council member, he's also Bookshop Santa Cruz, is he a co-owner, is he an employee, I don't know, I'm not sure what his status is, but he's Neil Coonerty's son, so he's obviously wrapped up in that store, and he acknowledges that. That's part, you know, one of his major jobs. The issue was, how do you deal with First Amendment issues around this law? And the Farrell is still working on that issue, and they're still not sure what to do. And so CJ Stock, the musician, is still playing music illegally, but there's no posted notice yet in the parking lot garage across from Clouds. You know, I think he's still there, although I didn't see him recently. I haven't heard he's moved, so I hope he's still strumming away there. And some of us are still considering, you know, being supportive of any protests that may come down if and when the pointy-headed bureaucrats come on with their latest, you know, move along everybody because we want to catch the poor people and we don't want to be sued for doing so. You know, help us criminalize poor people and make them suffer still more so we can clean up the garages. I have to say that I did speak with a woman who works in the parking garage next to Little Sichuan, the Chinese cafe. It's the same, it's on the same street as the Cinema 9 is. And she, you know, she had some horror stories about finding needles and in the bathrooms and homeless people with backpacks blocking access and people sleeping in the basement of the parking garage areas and how that was really troublesome and so forth. And I didn't have a lot of time to talk to her at great length about it. And I appreciated her being honest with me, particularly knowing that I'm a critic of that opinion. Apparently, according to her, it is still going to be legal to walk to a bathroom. Even the bathrooms are in the parking garage, and theoretically you're not supposed to be able to walk into the parking garage unless you have a vehicle or a bicycle there. It's illegal to do it. So I guess they're making a special exception or making a special area there. I hope people appreciate the way I'm cleverly fitting in local news into this LAPD article, or article about the LAPD's problems in Southern California because of the ACLU's successful lawsuit against the sleeping ban down there. The police department said the decision, the Ninth Circuit Court decision, which said, no, you can't arrest people for sitting, sleeping, or lying at night unless you have a place to give them to go for shelter. Sorry. The department said this decision took away the most effective weapon it had for ridding sidewalks of tents and other dwellings, which officials said often hide drug use and sales from plain view. This is horseshit, frankly, because they can easily pass a law that says no tents. The law is not about tents. It's about sitting, sleeping, or lying. So the police are lying here. Or let's put it this way. They're giving us a story which does not really cover the situation truly. In fact, people should have, although in Los Angeles the climate is warmer and probably it's easier to be outside, but you know, people here in Santa Cruz certainly need tents. They need the right to erect tents, and they need a place to erect tents, and they don't have it. They did once before Rutkin demanded they leave. That was in the Coral Street Open Air Shelter in 1995, which he then lambasted later, sending people off into obscurity, where half dozen to a dozen of them died, and homeless activist Dan Hopkins blamed Rutkin and Councilmember Kennedy for those deaths. At any time people want to call in and quibble with what I'm saying or present another point of view or possibly present some news that I'm unaware of that's happening in the community, please do. Phone number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. I haven't yet opened up the Pages in Color website. I'm going to do that now. I haven't because really nobody has been getting on it recently, and so I felt it's kind of a unlikely thing to do. But I'm going to do it anyway just to see if anybody has hopped on here. Let's see what we got on the Pages in Color website. Just me. That's if you want to be if you're shy about calling, or you've lost your voice, or perhaps you're mute, or you've got no phone but you've got a radio and you have a computer, highly unlikely, you can jump on pagesincolor.com and check me out, and I'll check you out, and I'll read whatever you put forward on Pages in Color. And we'll see how that goes. Again, continuing with this LA Times article. Crime has dropped 16% so far this year in the Central Division, which covers most of the downtown as well as Chinatown. But both Bratton, the Central Division chief, I'm kind of recapping some of this for those of you who came in late, Captain Andrew Smith, said they believe violent crime actually has risen slightly this year on Skid Row. Increasingly concerned about what they consider the slow pace of promised improvements for the district, a group of downtown business leaders, residents, and at least one service provider recently met with the mayor to discuss the situation. Police officials explained the decline in arrests as the consequence of a series of events that have unfolded in the past few months. And then we get again to the April U.S. 9th Circuit Court of Appeals decision blocking the police from arresting people for sitting, sleeping, or lying on public sidewalks. And the ACLU claimed that police were simply criminalizing homeless people for being homeless. The department said the decision took away the most effective weapon it had for ridding sidewalks of tents and other dwellings, which officials said often hide drug use and sales from plain view. Smith said that since the ruling, officers have seen more militant homeless activity, with people waving the newspaper stories and leaflets on the decision in their faces. Can you imagine? And what about that Constitution anyway? Hey, come on. Look at the Constitution. Officer, have you read the Constitution recently? But Ramona Ripston, executive director of the ACLU of Southern California, said the LAPD is scapegoating her organization for problems the department is having with policing Skid Row. If they are handcuffed and hobbled, it isn't because of the decision, said Ripston, who was appointed by the mayor to the Joint City-County Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority. There is nothing in the decision stopping them from arresting people for criminal activity. The only thing that is handcuffing them is themselves. That is to say, they can still arrest people for putting up a tent. They can still arrest people for drug use, even though, of course, if somebody is drinking outside, it's illegal. But if you're drinking in a bar, it's not illegal. Or in your house, it's not illegal. But they could still arrest them. They have the power to arrest these people. So the claims that they can't do it because they can't arrest someone for sleeping is horseshit, frankly, in simple language. The ACLU is now in court-ordered mediation with the city over how to resolve the case. The way to resolve the case is to rewrite the law, LA City Council, so that you acknowledge you can't arrest people for simply sleeping. And if that results in people sleeping outside, well, maybe you're going to have to address the issue with tent cities or shelters or low-income housing. You know, maybe that's going to have to happen, as it has in some cities where federal courts, as in Miami, have ruled, sorry, no more arrests for people who are sleeping. That's what they did in 1998. And Mike Rutkin claims that has changed. No, it hasn't changed. It is true the police are using trying to get around it by keeping one shelter bed open, but in fact it's resulted in far less harassment of homeless people there, at least under sleeping bans. Another factor driving down the arrest numbers involves the city attorney's office, which has raised concerns about arresting and immediately releasing suspects. Good. That sounds suspicious to me. Spokesman Jonathan Diamond said that too often in catch-and-release arrests, defendants fail to appear in court. It was an issue of inadequate identification, he said. If they are booked at the police station, fingerprints and other data can be collected more effectively. Again, putting a lot of energy into arresting people for the crimes of sleeping. That's what this is about. Or sitting or lying. Taking them to the police station to book them. It's only going to be effective from the point of view of these gentrification masters if they can really terrorize people into leaving. But since homeless people have no real way of leaving Los Angeles, it doesn't have that effect at all. It just makes them more wretched, is what it does. An increased number of protests around City Hall and the rest of downtown this year has forced Central to stretch its personnel to become a crowd-control division, Smith said. Protests over everything from immigration policy to the Iraq War have meant fewer patrols and ultimately less arrests, he said. Great. Well, how about some more protests in Santa Cruz? Might put the, give the police some useful function here. In recent months, the LAPD has focused more attention on large drug rings operating in, on Skid Row rather than small-time offenders. Of course, the major pharmaceutical rings that prey on people and create the largest number of lethal casualties each year is not just not in the scope of the LAPD, but they're probably consumers of these poisons. Some downtown watchers said those changes have affected city streets, either exacerbating the problem or preventing it from improving. But what isn't getting addressed are the folks shooting up heroin at the end of the block, the transvestite prostitutes on the corner, the young runaways selling their bodies for drugs, the guys wandering through the middle of the street all coked up, said Estela Lopez, head of the Central City East Association, which represents businesses in an area of downtown that includes Skid Row. Of course, what she means is, get rid of these people, is what she means. So she's not talking about addressing these people's problems. She's just talking about simply eliminating the situation so that the businesses can engage in more what they regard as more effective tourist activity. Though, ironically, I'm sure numbers of their customers are the same people that they want to criminalize. The tipping point has not only been reached, it has been breached, she said. It has completely overwhelmed the law enforcement resources to address it. But Casey Horan, executive director of LAMP Community, a downtown mental health services provider, said a too narrow focus on aggressive misdemeanor arrests fails to address the area's deep-seated problems. She worries that the mayor's Skid Row plan, due to be unveiled next month, will center too much on misdemeanors. If it does, she said, they are wasting resources. It will clog the courts and have no impact on reducing crime. I know it's challenging for the officers in the street. We just hope that their efforts focus on felony crime, gang and gun crime, significant drug trafficking, and on violence, because 90% probably of the people on the streets are engaging in misdemeanor crime. As in Santa Cruz, when they put in a whole network of laws that criminalize the most innocent kinds of behavior and give the police vast discretion as to which law to pick or choose to go after you for. Despite the setback, city officials remain optimistic Los Angeles is making progress on Skid Row. Osborne, the mayor's homelessness czar, said that since last fall there has been a particular focus on the area and how to fix its problems. She noted that policing is only one part of the strategy, which involves efforts to improve services for the homeless and add more affordable housing around the city. I haven't heard anything from the LA Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness, but when I do, I'll tell you about it. I think there are people who think that public safety is the answer to poverty and homelessness. I don't think it is, and the mayor doesn't think it is, she said. You can't ask the police to transform an entrenched community of homelessness and alienation, she said. You need medical treatment, addiction treatment, recovery beds, and most of all, supportive housing. True enough. So, that's an article from the L.A. Times. It's in today's L.A. Times, and it's called LAPD's Crime Offensive on Skid Row is Slipping. Arrests have fallen while homeless camps have grown. The addition of 50 officers is delayed. And you can check it out online. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and in case you want to call in, the phone number here is 427-3772. I will keep a close eye on the blinker. In fact, I think it'll even ring if you call in. So call in, and we'll chat. In the meantime, you'll be confronted with some ancient tunes by Phil Oakes.
King of cowboys, he rides hell. pony. He fights the bad boys, brings them to their knees. He patrols the highways from the air. He keeps the country safe from long hair. I'm the masculine American man. I kill, therefore I am. I don't like the black man, for he does not know his place. Take the back of my hand, or I'll spray you with my mace. I'm as brave as any man can be. I find my courage through chemistry. I'm the masculine American man. I kill their.
That, of course, was Phil Oakes' I Kill, Therefore I Am, one of his lesser-known songs. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. I'm Robert Norris, and this is your radio station, so you better make use of it if you know what's good for you. 427-3772 is the number to call. You want to call in. A quick update on my own court case. I have a case coming up on September 25th. I'm due to go to trial for disrupting a public meeting and resisting arrest. And the English translation of that is, I stood at the microphone waiting to speak for 2 minutes on an issue which the person in front of me spoke for on 2 minutes, and the person behind me did the same, but Mike Rodkin used a rule he and the counsel had concocted specifically to limit my discussion on a variety of issues, not to allow me to speak on this item, and I felt that was a violation of the Brown Act. And he had me quickly arrested, and the arresting officer used violence. That was Lieutenant Clark. We have a hearing coming up on that issue on August 30th. Clark apparently is, somebody is concealing complaints about Clark, and we're trying to, or if not concealing them, and it looks like Judge Burdick, who is the judge who is hearing the complaints around this case in the so-called Pitches hearing, and I've talked about this before, this is the reason you should file complaints against the police officers who are abusive, because even though the police department will do very little about them, if anything, they do go into the record so that other victims of these police officers can get your name and number later and get you to come to court and attack the credibility of the police officer if, in fact, the police officer has a history of violence or lying on police reports. We know, of course, that that would never be true for our police force, but you know, in that rare case in Nome, Alaska, where you actually have a corrupt police official, you know, I guess you might want to do it. I'm speaking facetiously here. It's clear to me with Lieutenant Clark, and I don't say this with any personal animosity, that Clark has lied on a number of issues under oath around my case. We did a deposition regarding his behavior, specifically, for example, around threats against me. He had me in handcuffs, and he was saying he was going to hurt me if I ever, quote, resisted him again. I didn't resist him. I kept asking him. I kept insisting on my right to stand at the microphone until he said I was under arrest. The minute he would say I was under arrest, I'd be willing to leave. And he declined to do that. He simply started strong-arming me out of the room and injured my hand in the process of doing that. Naturally, he doesn't want to acknowledge that. And the issue is going to come up on an August 30th hearing, whether he has lied on other police reports or misused public documents. And one such complaint has been sustained, reportedly, according to a rather impressive DA investigator who testified is going to be testifying against him. The DA, my DA, the one who's going after me, Archie Weber, doesn't want this information revealed because it's going to obviously make Clark a less credible witness in all kinds of other cases. So he's trying to exclude the testimony of this person, who is quite a reputable DA investigator, as I understand. No longer with the DA's office, but he's a DA investigator. And we'll see whether Judge Guy, that's the person who is now trying my case, it's a new judge, a former Monterey prosecutor, Monterey County prosecutor, who is now the judge of Department 1, GUI, Judge Guy. She's a relatively younger woman who is on the bench and new to the courts. And again, the problem with all these judges is they come straight out of the district attorney's offices, and you get a pretty biased perspective. Now, I don't know if she's biased or not. I hope she's not, but my hopes don't fly too high. Anyway, on August 30th, this is going to be a hearing in Department 1 at 10 o'clock. And I just learned today that that my second case, which is not a case against me, but my case against the city in federal court, a case that points out false arrests by the city at the city council in order to shut me and other activists down, and in which we are suing the city for damages and to change their decorum rules, will be going to trial. It's scheduled now to go to trial on the same day in San Jose, September 25th, which can't happen, of course, because the same two attorneys, David Beauvais of Berkeley and Kate Wells, and the same, I'm the plaintiff in one case. In the federal case, I'm suing the city, and I'm the defendant. I'm criminally being prosecuted by the city in the other case. I can't be in two places at once, and neither can the attorney. So it's going to be changed, but I will probably continue to go to trial on the criminal case in September unless they drop it. There is a chance that they may drop at least a part of the case in order to protect the reputation of Lieutenant Clark, and we'll see if DA Weber wants to proceed to do that. This whole case is, of course, completely ridiculous. It is it's hard to say, you know, what the motivation here is. I don't think I'm such a huge menace to the city or the district attorney's office. They actually have a good reason to go after me. I mean, I have a radio show, and I write the occasional broadside on indie media. But I'm regarded by a lot of people as pretty marginal, even though I think what I say is quite true and quite accurate and needs to be said, and why I will continue to speak out. I think that there's sort of a bureaucratic process, the same reason the drug war goes against people like Roger Minch, who is a medical marijuana provider. These kinds of prosecutions have a momentum of their own, and that's what's really so sinister. That's why innocent people get ground up so regularly and so frequently and with such lack of compassion. If the police have powers, they use them. If the prosecution has the power and funding, the prosecution uses it. It's a nasty reality. So that's a little bit of an update. I will give you more information about when. I think the federal case is probably going to be postponed. I'm not sure yet. I'm still conferring with my attorneys and others to see what they think the best approach should be. I kind of had hoped that I would hear from someone about the forum that happened this afternoon at the county building around the issue of medical marijuana, which attorney Ben Rice, and I'm going online here to look for it, had was holding with ACLU members. And if anybody actually attended that forum, I'd love to hear from you. 427-3772 is the number to call. I may know more about it on Sunday when I come back in the morning. And I've invited Ben Rice to post some comments and some documentation for people. And you can go to read the story, which I'm now about to read, about Roger Minch, which I posted on the Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz on the Internet. The story is titled and has been made a feature story. Thank you, Santa Cruz Indie Media, for doing this. Persecution of registered medical marijuana provider continues. And also there's a medical marijuana question and answer session. There was one earlier today in the county building. Again, I'm hoping someone will call in on that. Compassionate caregiver Roger Minch was arrested and jailed in August of last year, again for cultivating and selling medical marijuana through his California-registered medical marijuana dispensary, the Hemporium, to medical marijuana patients. He reports he was held for 7 days in jail on a probation violation hold. Not satisfied, the marijuana enforcement team then went to a second judge, Almquist, and got a search warrant, tore up his entire crop, and destroyed it. Said Minch, they wiped my computer, seized my phone, and tried to destroy my life. Minch is also an in-home caregiver for two patients, including one who is suffering from advanced cancer. He has kept a low profile on this case, hoping it would be dismissed. At a hearing last Wednesday, the DA declined to do that on August 9th. This arrest was made in spite of Judge Samuel Stevens' determination in May of 2005 that Minch had the legal right to operate the Hemporium while on probation. Minch is still appealing his original sentence from the initial trial. His trial for the current charges is scheduled for October, and Stevens is apparently allowing, it's actually Almquist, not Stevens, is apparently allowing a caregiver defense which he had refused him during the initial trial. There will be a medical marijuana question and answer period with the ACLU drug war representative. And again, I'm going to try to get more information about that. And then there's my article continues, if I can get this to open. The Sentinel reports that local attorney Ben Rice and Alan Hopper, senior staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union Reform Project, people have spoken today at this. And you can check the past history of Minch on the Indie Bay website as well, in terms of the kind of, well, straight harassment of a medical marijuana provider that the district attorney's office is going in for. And my article continues. I interviewed Minch for free radio last week, and you can indeed go to the HuffSantaCruz.org website and download the August 10th show, and you'll hear it in the last about 100 minutes into the show, in case you're interested in hearing it. At last, a caller. I will immediately interrupt my tirade and see who's calling in. Hey, you're on free radio with Robert. Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Okay, well, this is James, and I was supposed to meet you at 5:45.
Yes.
But I thought that it was 7. That I was supposed to meet you for some reason.
Ah, well, let me take you off the air and find a way to get you over here. And in the meantime, I'll play a little music because you are an important person to have in the studio. Are you at the 7-Eleven?
Yeah, I'm at the 7-Eleven.
Okay, well, we'll get you into the studio shortly. And in the meantime, folks will have to be satisfied with a little more Phil Oakes. What I'm going to do instead while I'm waiting, James, is play a little something from a Berkeley protest. So you stay on the line for a minute, okay?
Okay.
Don't go away. So this is from Berkeley, and it's when Berkeley has continued to fight with the city about its free clothing box. And I don't have a really good update on that, but I did do some taping 3 or 4 months ago of activists who gathered to fight this and to build their own free clothing box. And we're now going to hear some more of that. Specifically, we're going to hear Yukon Hannibal, who's an African-American homeless activist.
Man is engaging in a criminal form of hole digging. Your name, sir?
Wait, what did you say? Criminal what?
Criminal hole digging.
Oh.
You're a holistic kind of guy.
My name is Yukon Hannibal.
And Yukon, are you prospecting for gold here? What's going on?
Actually, what I'm doing, I'm creating for other people, with the people, a free box, you know. It's going to be a box that's going to distribute free clothing to the people of People's Park. This is something that we had before, you know, until the aliens in black uniform prevailed and removed it, you know. And they have removed it twice. It seems like they have such a distaste for the people doing anything in People's Park other than without their authority or without their observation.
Now, the People's Park closed free box has been around People's Park for how many years?
Altogether, about 15.
And how many times has it been removed in that period of time? Any idea?
Oh, probably about 6-7 times, man.
And it usually reappears within a few days, a few weeks?
Sometimes. I remember once it appeared within a few hours.
Now, has there been a free box? I know this one was brought today, but how long has the park been without a free box?
Well, you know, like, that's kind of, sometimes, no, I can finish. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Why don't we catch you in a moment
I can answer that. Just let me try to get down here.
It's getting a little harder to get into with those, pole's about six or seven inches
deep. How many times had the park been without a free box? I think in the history of the park, I would say possibly about 3 or 4 times. This is something that has lasted a lot longer, though, this removal of the free box, you know.
It's been gone for a while?
Yeah, it's been gone for a while.
And this has impacted people's ability to get free clothing in Santa Cruz, Berkeley.
Yeah, and it's also taken away from People's Park. It's trying to take away from People's Park the essence of People's Park, which is, you know, free clothes, free food, and
free music,
and stuff like that.
Free access.
What they're actually...
Don't forget the beating.
Free beating.
Yeah.
Absolutely free.
See, what they're doing is they're trying to desecrate the park. They're trying to humble us in the process of them desecrating the park, you know. And they trying to humble, like with the bathroom, the building of the bathroom, and the basketball court. And, you know,
that people were able to tear out the volleyball court or to force it to be removed, but the basketball court is still here. Is that because it's more popular?
Yeah, possibly. People use that a lot more than they did volleyball court. They knew that the volleyball court was just nonsense and that it didn't really belong in People's Park. It was just to satisfy the yuppie thirst for recreation, which means that they have all these other parks, you know, but they wanted to come into People's Park again to try to steal the essence of People's Park, you know.
Thank you, Hannibal. I'm going to let you get your work done here.
Thank you.
Cruz, we're talking with
Debbie Moore.
Hey, Debbie, and you have a smaller person with you.
Yes. This is Maya Drucker.
Did you bring her for some police training in case the police decided to arrest her?
She's the daughter of Eric Drucker. He's a great political activist and artist who's done many political posters. I'm sure people have heard of Eric.
It's quite a find for the police if they're able to arrest the daughter of Eric.
Well, we're not looking to be arrested. In fact, what we're hoping to do is be able to stay on site throughout the building of the free box. And what we wanted to add was a performance piece. It's called the Underwear and Undressing, a performance art protest. Protesting the ban that UC has placed on giving out clothing and the free box in People's Park. And I feel that by bringing in clothing in huge bags and actually giving it out and handing it out to people, we're starting another direction that the police cannot attack, because to personally give clothing to one another is a fundamental...
But do you have a permit? Do you have papers?
Like, if you were to take the shirt off your back and give it to someone standing here, that would be a little bit beyond what the police are cracking down on now, and yet it would still be giving clothing.
Maybe we get Mayor Bates to pass some legislation on that. What do you think?
Well, I think hopefully we keep moving beyond the legislation. I'm planning to take my shirt off and be wearing underwear while giving my own clothing to people here, and I'm hoping to start a little mini direction, a movement in which people still are bringing clothes to the park and giving it out to other people just out of their own personal interest and their verve, you know, of person-to-person interaction.
Now, Debbie, you, of course, have been famous for your, what's the group that you've been working with?
It's been the Explicit Players.
Which are a group that performs clothesless and shamelessly, and perhaps, what's your last performance piece? What was it?
Well, my last performance was at the People's Park Anniversary. I sat nude in meditation for 3 hours. It was a freezing cold day.
Anyone join you or not?
Some other people who had been Explicit Players over the years joined me for small periods of time. And in my recent interest in meditation is deepening a focus on the things that really seem valuable. So being able to stay for long periods of time and moving things in a good direction is my hope. And today I thought there would be more impact in wearing black panties and a black bra because, number one,
you're always getting naked and it's getting very boring, right?
Well, for me, it's never boring, but I think that I do tend to get stopped immediately and rested, so...
Really? So there is a law against nudity in Berkeley?
It was written right around 1992.
In honor of the naked guy?
I've been arrested about 12 times under that law. And
because a naked guy went to school. Somebody stripped in city council and they freaked out?
Yeah. Well,
was that you or was that him? I want the truth.
Well, he started by going there nude to try to describe his position. And then other people and other meetings came and supported him, you know. But basically it was a time of a lot of freedom, and people were taking up a lot of interest in continuing the nudity that has always been in People's Park. There have always been acts of liberation like nudity here. And I, you know, have performed here consistently for about a decade.
And you weren't arrested during the anniversary.
I never have been arrested during the anniversaries, but I have been arrested over a dozen times. And
last
I've been.
Last time was?
The last time was the 98, when they took away the juries. They made it an infraction so there would be no juries.
And did you go before a judge on that occasion or not?
Yes. The district attorney attended every single hearing for like about 20 hearings and arranged.
You didn't take off your clothes in court, of course.
No, we talked to him. We thought that, you know, maybe we could reach the judge more on his own terms if we had our clothing on. So in court, you know, we appeared with our clothing on, but we won 6 out of 7 trials. You know, when I say won, it means we just were able to maintain the status we had previously had.
And the 7th was the last one?
7th was the last one when the DA attended every single hearing, though it was just the status of a traffic ticket.
Name of the DA?
Emanuela Albuquerque.
Dear, dear.
So,
now, since that time, you have not been appearing naked generally, or only at People's Park celebrations? Has it cut back on your feeling able to take off your clothes when you think it's appropriate?
Recently, I've noticed that people tend to join in with less fluidity and less ease. People step out less often, and so therefore, it's a little bit harder to keep an entourage going of the Explicit Players. But I still do solo events pretty often. And, you know, here and there every few weeks I do different kinds of events in different parts of Berkeley. And I'm still finding that either whether it's going with my shirt off or fully nude, I'm still finding a lot of...
Shirt off is not illegal in Berkeley, right?
It is. Included in the anti-nudity ordinance.
I see, because in Santa Cruz it's legal to take off your shirt, but not to show your pee-pee.
Which is great. I want to encourage anyone who's listening to get in touch with me if you'd like to have a breast freedom parade. I'm on my 15th year of annual breast freedom parade. And I'd love to have one in Santa Cruz where women, men, and kids get together and take off shirts to celebrate. I'll travel down and we can have a great time. You can reach me at explicitplayers.com or just Google on the naked people of Berkeley and you'll find me. So, you know, I'm hoping that our activities today will continue to encourage the free box. You know, the nudity has been a part of performance as well as protest for all these 15 years.
And baby's got a lot of clothes on, I must
say. Yeah, she's grooving.
Well, the weather is right for taking off clothes. And again, you can reach Debbie Moore at explicitplayers.org or theexplicitplayers.org.
.com.
.com,
yeah,
sorry.
Either way, I'll
probably. Hopefully, if that screws up, just try naked folks in Berkeley or naked people in Berkeley.
We want to keep encouraging people to bring clothing to People's Park and give it out personally, one-on-one to people. Give it out any way you can because it's a great custom and it's under severe attack from a merciless corporation, huge corporation that is saying somehow they cannot afford to let people have a box of clothing given out to people in the park. It's a real crime.
Are you in mourning because of the death of Cody's?
And that was Debbie Moore of the Explicit Players, and she actually had more to say on a number of other subjects. But for the very reason I haven't played this tape, and it was recorded in April or May, and it's now August. I just don't have time because there's so many other things happening. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Call-in number here is 427-3772. I kind of hope to be able to finish this article about Roger Minch, but, you know, the article is online, and I'm hoping we can actually get more information by Sunday, maybe get somebody who actually attended this Thursday, this forum today on medical marijuana. Who knows? Maybe Ben Rice will agree to come in. I don't know. Ben Rice was originally very active in the fight against the sleeping ban. He was involved in trying to set up a Citizens Police Review Board. He's a famous attorney who has represented Valerie Corral of Wham. So, you know, he's been around. And he did say when I talked to him in the courthouse, he might want to try to be helpful in posting some more information online. This is an important issue. And I'm just going to say this before I go, at least before I leave this issue. The reason I'm really concerned about Roger Minch, I'm concerned about all this drug war bullshit, you know, whether it's medical marijuana or ordinary marijuana or heroin, I don't care what. I'm concerned that there's a huge amount of resources being used essentially to create a huge black market economy and fund police departments. The whole thing is stupid and vicious and destroys lives. And I've talked about it, and you've heard about it all your life. It hasn't changed, you know, from 50 years ago. It's the same crap, only it's, you know, multiplied by 10,000. You know, it's just that the war has increased. And, of course, the casualties have increased. And the number of arrests, 750,000 for marijuana in the country last year. That doesn't mean there are 750,000 people in jail for marijuana. I believe there are 2,000 people in jail in California. That was the estimate that Reefer Madness author Eric Schlosser had when I was playing him on the radio. But it's nasty, and it's nasty in Santa Cruz County, and that's what counts. It's our county that this is happening in. It's the people you know that are dropping out of sight because of this, or their friends, or their relatives, or whoever it is. And it's just, you know, it's like watching things happen in Germany in the 30s that you shouldn't be watching happen. You should be doing something about it. My role here is to put the information out. And the arguments they're using to prosecute Roger Minch, that he is not, his group, the Hemporium, is not a collective, that it's not a cooperative, that it's just a small self-supporting business that is selling marijuana to patients with legitimate cards and legitimate medical problems. They claim that it's illegal because it's not a collective or a cooperative. That means that Greenway, the medical marijuana distribution center that's opened up in Harvey West and has been going for a full year with the full consent of the city council and the police department here, is also illegal. And they actually admit that in the transcripts. They say, yes, that's illegal too. But they don't clarify why they're not going to close down Greenway. Instead, they're going after this guy, Roger Minch. So we'll be talking more about this. I mean, it is really incredible. You can read this whole story. You can read my very patchy summary of it on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz Indie Media, the website online. But if you want to go and actually read the transcript of what the detectives are saying, what the defense attorney is saying, you can go to the courts and they'll take you to a room and you can read the files. And it's interesting, really very educational. I'll try to pass on some of it on this show. And who knows, maybe we'll get some actual mainstream or, you know, more industrious reporter or indie media reporter or Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster to pick it up. So hopefully that's going to happen. But with me in the studio today, and you heard him on the air a few moments ago, finding his way to the studio, late, but not too late. He's here, and it's I'm really pleased that we could have him here. It's a man who's here in a secret identity. He's covered it completely in black cloth. I can't see anything. In fact, he's got a he's smiling. He's just taking it easy. He and I ran into each other at the courthouse a couple months ago, and he initially, before I even say a word, I'm going to let him introduce himself by whatever name he chooses and talk a little bit about how he came to this pass here in the studio. So who are you, sir? And just account for yourself.
Well, for this, for all intensive purposes, I guess we're going to call me James tonight. And I'd like to ask the listeners to bear with me because I'm not a public speaker. And I did have my doubts about even showing up here today. But I feel strongly about a lot of injustice that occurs in our county. Now, I have lived all over the United States. And I have seen a lot of police departments operate in certain situations. And our police department here tends to mask itself in its own professional hoopla, so to speak, as where other police departments actually are more professional. Our police department, it would, just like all police departments, always got each other's back. And there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that that are illegal and corrupt, and people need to know about that.
And that's the reason you're here.
That's exactly why I'm here.
Well, we met each other outside the court at the Huff meeting. Huff meets every Wednesday, everybody. Come on down, 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning, right outside the in the breezeway between the courthouse and the county building, 701 Ocean. Check it out. But you were coming from what's called a mental health court or mental health probation, and I was I hadn't really heard that term before. I mean, I know there are people who are, you know, get some extenuating circumstances because of mental health. What's that about?
Well, most people that end up on mental health probation are so low functioning that the county feels that the county and the state, as a matter of fact, feels that they need to inebriate them with prescription drugs in such a manner that they have a difficult time even walking down the street. There's a lot of folks that you see that are homeless, and if you're, you know, if you don't have compassion or whatever, and maybe you're listening to this, and you see certain people that are just like real dirty or whatever, that are homeless and they talking to themselves and so forth and walking down the street. A lot of those people are on guardianship where they have to go down to County Building K. And they get money once a week from the state and county subsidized. And they're on so many mental, psychotropic legal drugs that it almost makes it, perpetuates the problem that they already have. And the actual counseling that they receive is very small. They see a psychiatrist to keep them on what's called chemical therapy. And that's about it. How you get on this type of guardianship, there's different ways. A person can get into the system and be institutionalized by their parents, their brothers, their sisters, their friends, whoever thinks that they're out of control. Or a judge in any particular case can get a hold of you and say, well, instead of criminally prosecuting this person for whatever particular crime that they supposedly committed, we're going to put him on mental health probation. We're going to get him on drugs and supposedly counseling and monitor, you know, their progress in that way. On one hand, it's really good for people that have serious mental illnesses that are not receiving the help that they need. There are certain people that need to be chemically inebriated. There are certain people that need chemical therapy. Most of the people that need chemical therapy probably would do a lot better if they were not on chemicals, but instead saw counselors, psychiatrists on a regular basis, more than just once a week a lot of times. Now, they do have organization here in Santa Cruz that's called Access, the Access Team. The Access Team is a group of babysitters, basically, is what they do. And most of them are not psychiatrists or medical doctors. A lot of them have degrees and work with, they start out in whatever, working with troubled youth, and then they, you know, work their way through and they get more degrees and they go to school and they eventually graduate to working for the county or the state, babysitting these people, making sure that they get their checks, driving them around, if they want to go to the grocery store, they bring them to the grocery store, you know. And our county just got, I think it was, I don't remember the exact amount, but it was somewhere in the neighborhood of like $2 million.
Proposition 63 grant, perhaps? So that was the millionaire tax that passed 2 years ago, which money was to go to mental health services. Supposedly not supposed to be a lot of money for involuntary therapy, but it sounds like what you're saying is that, because this sounds like is this court imposed? Are we talking about voluntary?
My particular case is court imposed, and most people that are do work with the Access Team, and most people that are receiving help, that are on the streets, that are homeless, that are having difficulties with their mental health, are court imposed. And now everybody remembers Reagan. You know, Reagan had a really good idea back in, when he was governor of California. He had a really good idea to help our budget because the insane asylums at that time were doing nothing but electrical shock and lobotomy. So, but he did it wrong.
Thorazine and stelazine, too.
Right. Okay. So he shut them all down, put all these people out on the streets, you know, and we've had a problem with it ever since. But
well, he didn't provide the housing and community services.
Exactly. Well, you know, what he should have done is put halfway houses in and worked, you know, with the people that could have, you know, started working and so forth. Instead, he just kicked everybody out.
Well, this whole business of, do I understand properly, is there a mental health court? Or is, I know they have drug courts, which is a specific
right.
court.
No, this is, they don't have a mental health court, okay?
Yeah.
Like, in my particular case, 15 years ago, I had difficulties with felonies. I'm not going to get into the details of it, but consequently, I have not been the modern or the model citizen. Most of it has just been flakiness, to be honest with you, not showing up at court on time, difficulties with drug abuse, difficulties with alcoholism. I have a failed marriage that, well, you know, I mean, a lot of it was her fault, but a lot of it was my fault as well because of, you know, these problems that I have, which turned out to be a bipolar situation where I have a few different problems. The bipolar is a major one.
So they mandated you take medication through a court?
Right. Well, what occurred was, I had a big breakup with my ex-wife. I fell way too deep into drugs and alcohol, and it all came to a head when I had pretty much a nervous breakdown. Mm-hmm. That landed me in jail. While I was in jail, they said, I had to say, you know what? I don't want this. I've had problems. You know, 15 years ago I have a felony, I've been on probation, and I can't get out of it. I can't get out of this perpetual circle, and it's all really minor stuff, you know, stuff that it's ridiculous, you know, that you shouldn't even really be going to jail for, but still the laws are the way that they are and you have to work
with them.
Can
you be more specific about this?
Well, I can. Most of it, open container tickets, mm-hmm. just stuff that piles up and you end up going back to jail and mm-hmm. being, you know, just
the original felony was violent or nonviolent?
The original felony was violent, which mm-hmm. is my nervous breakdown was I don't even know what the word. It was similar type of, you know, mental duress.
You got into a fight with some people?
I got into a fight with some people. Cops showed up. I was apparently not very coherent. When they took me in, you know, I waited a couple of days. My lawyer came, showed up, public defender, whatever. I told him, look, this is ridiculous. I want to get some help.
Just a couple years ago?
This was a few years ago, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to get some help.
So he took you to he sought mental health probation for you?
Well, no. What he sought was a court-appointed psychiatrist.
Uh-huh.
So what he did was he filled out all the paperwork to get a court-appointed psychiatrist. Yeah. The court-appointed psychiatrist came down and saw me and said, yeah, this person is, you know, this person is manic. We have, you know, a possibility that he wasn't responsible for his actions in that particular situation and that he has ongoing possible mental problems. Now, the reality of this, and this is not really even why I wanted to be here.
Right.
Why I wanted to be here is sort of next to the point of all this. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have certain problems that I'm working with. I see a counselor. I am no longer on any of their drugs. I pay the counselor myself. I'm out of their programs because their programs are designed to keep you in their programs. And by going to mental health, by going through using a mental health defense, what I was trying to do was get out of the revolving door in the first place.
Were you successful eventually in doing that?
Well,
are you likely to be successful in the future? Where are you in this?
I am successful because I'm blessed by God. I've got, you know, even with the drugs that I've done and the mental problems that I have, I've got a halfway decent head on my shoulders that, you know, and I've got a lot of really supportive friends. And
but what I mean is in terms of your objective in getting out of the court.
Let me finish.
Yeah, sure.
I basically have a, number one, huge desire to be, you know, independent of. And number two, I have a excellent support system mm-hmm. that is in place, mm-hmm. Which is allowing me to get on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, you can't. I mean, you know, there are some people that do, but those are very rare cases.
Now, is this a support system that... Are you referring to one you created yourself, or one that the courts set
one,
up?
One that I created. Friends that I have.
Relatives.
You know, I attend church. I go to AA. I created a support system in order to lift myself up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you rely on their system, all that they're going to do is make it so that you're going to stay in the system.
And that involves a lot of court-mandated medication.
Tons of court-mandated medication dependent. They tried to tell me that I had to be on these drugs for the rest of my life.
These drugs being?
Well, you know, there's a long list.
give us a few.
Let's see. I've been on lithium. They wanted me on 600 milligrams of lithium 3 times a day. 1,800 milligrams of Neurontin 3 times a day. Plus this other one that I can't even pronounce. As well as an antidepressant starts with an L. There was a bunch of them. Yeah,
we've had people on the show who have pointed out that these drugs, though in some cases, you know, I mean, one can never tell with an individual case, but they're a huge industry, they're a huge racket, and they actually increase the propensity of people they'll temporarily mask or control symptoms, but they'll actually create brain damage of a kind that makes psychotic episodes in the future more likely, not to mention other side effects. We had Robert Whitaker, Mad in America author, and we've had other authors on the nationally known authors on the show talking about this issue. I have a pretty strong prejudice against certainly the mandated use of psychiatric medication, although, you know, people want to choose to do it, you know, you should certainly do it, but to be, you know, steered in that direction as President Bush is steering the country with this massive, children over 6 are now supposed, there's a program they're working on that will have everybody diagnosed, so you can get treated with Ritalin early, that sort of shit. What interested me was how this kind of program might be used with homeless people or poor people. Are they kind of shoehorned into it? How many people are in it? Probably don't have all these stats, but, you know, that's what interests me.
First of all, you have to be potentially dangerous in their eyes. You have to be potentially dangerous. If you're just a menace, you know, if you're just
a nuisance
or, you know, something like that, yeah, then you got to be a nuisance for 20 years before that they will do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then, you know, you're lucky if if they put you on something, some type of, you know, government help, you know, because most of those people need government help that are a nuisance for 20 years, you know. Some people just can't help themselves. You know, I'm not knocking anybody that needs to use the system.
Sure, I was just, again, looking at the kind of the system of how this came, you know, I mean, whether this... I'm trying to understand what this mental health probation is generally about.
Basically, insanity is not a medical term. Insanity is a legal term. A medical term is like bipolar, post-traumatic stress disorder.
I understand.
Yeah. You know, okay, those are medical terms. Mm-hmm. To make an insanity plea, instead of having one...
You didn't make an insanity plea in your case.
Well, that's what you have to do.
You're saying that the only people in the mental health program are those who have made insanity pleas?
No. I'm saying in my particular case, how I got mandated for mental health probation is this. Mm-hmm. Because of the mental breakdown or the emotional breakdown that I had. There was a fight. Cop showed up, blah, blah, blah. You know,
you were charged with felony assault or something?
Similar things happened 15 years ago. They determined that, you know, I've never been stable. I've never been able to make a, you know, normal probation and so forth and so on.
So a judge gave you this.
So he gave me an option to see a psychiatrist. If the psychiatrist saw me 8 different times, an hour each time. So he saw me for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. He determined that if I was on these drugs that... that I would no longer be a threat. He also determined that at the time of any crime that I may have committed, that I was so mentally out of it, basically,
that
I was not responsible.
You went on to the drugs for how long?
Well, I went on to the drugs. I was on them for a while. I didn't like them. I'm off them now.
Does that put you in a position where you're now vulnerable? Are they likely to seize your person again and say you're off your drug?
No, because my doctor. Because I'm seeing my own personal psychiatrist now. I'm not using any of their programs.
You're using support systems.
Other support system.
Well, let's then move to this other issue, which is the real reason you came here, which is the real. Frankly, I think it's interesting what you're telling me, and I'd like to get more details at some point, but. You mentioned that tasering has had a certain impact on your life. Can you clarify that for me? Tasering, for those of course who don't know, is an electronic charge that the police get out of. It's an electronic charge they give to people in order to.
Oh no, they get something out of it.
And they may get a charge out of it.
It depends on the officer.
To control people. Now, I guess deputies have tasers now. I don't know if Santa Cruz police officers have tasers.
I think they do. I don't know.
But you yourself have been tasered.
Yeah, I was just tasered 3 times while being beat up by 5 different cops.
And this was tasered 3 times in a space of a couple of minutes, or
in a space of a couple of minutes. And I had 3 cops on top of me, one standing behind 2 other cops, so that in the videotape, because they're in situations like that, they're supposedly required by law to have a videotape.
Did you get a copy of that videotape afterwards?
Well, the thing is. You couldn't see anything. All you could see was the backs of cops.
Mm-hmm. But you actually saw the tape?
I was going to get the tape, and I still could because they're supposed to keep it for a year. Mm-hmm. But I was neglectful in my duties of pursuing everything properly.
Keep going.
Okay. So what happened basically was the sergeants at the jail were determined to
you were held you were in custody at the jail.
I was in custody.
Okay, you're in custody for what crime?
I was in custody for my mental breakdown.
And this was in 2000 and
this was 2-3 years ago.
Okay. And so you were in custody in jail, and this tasering happened 2-3 years ago?
Right. Well, it happened just like a couple of weeks before they killed that guy.
That was a year ago.
Right.
David Anthony Cross was killed in jail.
Yeah.
After he was tasered, some say because of the tasering, immediately after he was tasered.
Well, it was definitely because of the tasering, but a judge said that it was... It was not a direct result of the tasering that caused his death. He had a heart attack. He had a heart attack because his heart stopped because they've sent 50,000 volts through his system.
Well, it's kind of therapy, you know. It helps you feel better. But why? Now you were. Can you remember the details of the tasering episode? Do you remember what you were doing before, during, and after? Do you have a clear recollection?
Right. Well, they came to move me, and
you were in a jail cell.
I was in a jail cell, and because of my mental health position, I was on you know drugs. They had me drugged up a little bit, but because of my mental health position, they were not supposed to insert their power over me like this. Okay.
Right.
And there was only one sergeant that was wanting to do
this. Name of the sergeant?
Bowie. Maybe it's not even sergeant. Maybe it's one sergeant above sergeant.
Lieutenant?
Deputy? Might be a lieutenant. See, there's deputies, and then there's sergeants, and then there's like...
Do you know her first name?
No, I don't know her first name, but there's two buoys that work there, and the male buoy is really cool. I think he's a sergeant. He's a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. He would never do anything like this. He's very compassionate with people, and there are those...
So you were sitting in your cell singing loud songs and beating your head against the wall.
Nothing like that. I was sitting in my cell. They told me that they wanted to, remove me and do something else with me. And I told them that would not be a good idea.
Because?
Because of my dissociative disorder.
Now, where did they want to move you? Why did you object to being moved?
I objected to being moved because I was still fighting my case, comfortable, and in a situation where I was able to do that.
And was that, what cell block was that?
I was in N.
This is in the county jail.
Yeah.
And this was in, like, September or October of 2005, a year ago.
It was a little bit more than a year ago. So maybe it was more than, like, a couple of weeks before they killed the other guy. It might have been a couple of months.
Okay.
But I am not good with times. Part of the problem of... You're having my mind fried by prescription drugs.
Ah, there you are. You smoke more marijuana.
Also, by the way, the prescription drugs gave me made me overweight and gave me borderline diabetes, sent my cholesterol level through the roof. So now that I have to take Lipitor in order to bring my cholesterol level down, the prescription drugs are really, really bad for you. Extremely bad. But all psychiatrists want to do nowadays, instead of put you through proper counseling and programs and work with you, all they want to do is chemical therapy.
Well, here was this deputy who wanted to give you a little electrical therapy.
Well, first, okay, so they said they wanted to move me. They have a group of people that's called classification. Classification determines where you're supposed to go in the jail. Classification came in and said you should stay where you're at. We understand why you don't want to be moved. You should stay.
Who was the officer of classification? Do you remember?
I don't remember his name. See,
right.
You know.
No problem. Go ahead.
But he was the current classification.
What happened next?
His superior of the shift said, "No, we're going to move him."
And you remember that person's name?
Yeah, that's Bowie. Now, see, Bowie don't like me because she runs around pretending to be everybody's friend. If she walks into a cell block, she'll play nicety-nicety with all the guys, you know, and listen to them and stuff, and I'll try to do this and I'll try to do that. But all she does is verbally appease people. She doesn't ever do anything for anybody, and she really basically does nothing but cause problems.
So she came up to you and told you that she wanted you to move? Or
well, she didn't like me anyhow. So she
Because
I don't take her bullshit. I've been in jail before. I've had the unfortunate problem of not just having bipolar disorder, but of being raised by bikers. I was kicking bikers out of my house by the time I was 10 with my crippled mother's cane. So, you know, when people come at me a certain way, I do have a little bit of rebellious...
You defend yourself.
Yeah. And I see right through phony people. I have a real difficult time with people that are phony. And so, you know, this officer Bowie, you know, appeases everybody and plays these verbal games with the inmates in order to keep them, you know, whatever. She wants to always look like the good guy. When she's not, she never does anything. She's full of it. So I was the type of person that would tell her
that. So she came in and she said, James... you're going to have to move. And so what did
she... She didn't say anything.
Right.
She had the classification guy come in, and the classification guy said, well, Officer Bowie wants you to move. We don't see why you should move. There's no reason why you should move, but she wants you to move. As a matter of fact, we're recommending that you stay.
Okay. And so what happened next?
Right. So I said, okay, well, not really too interested in moving. And the classification says, well, they're on their way. They're mm-hmm. going to cell extract you.
Cell okay. extract you. So what are that and what happened then?
Well, it all depends on what you do with a cell extract. Now, okay, if you are, say, in CDC, which is California Department of Corrections, if a CDC officer does a cell extraction, they don't do anything. They turn your water off, they turn your toilet off, they turn your power off and say, and they won't feed you. And they say, when you're hungry, come on out. mm-hmm. That's what you're supposed to do. And most people sit in there for an hour with no power, no toilet, no water, and no food and go, you know, this is stupid. All right, I'll move.
So you expected that might happen?
Well, no. I didn't expect that would happen because I really wasn't planning on giving them any type of physical resistance. What I expected to happen was to have them come in, pull me out, appeal to the classification officer. The classification officer would put the paperwork in before they'd, you know, before the night was over, I'd be back where I was,
okay.
the way things are supposed to be, right?
Okay.
Talk to people, reason to people. Classification officer already said that he put the paperwork in to keep me where I was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what I was expecting. Instead, when they opened the cell door, there was five cops there. I had my hands up, did not resist whatsoever. Two of them grabbed me, threw me onto the bed and started beating me in the face.
Now with the throw in the bed face first, back first?
Back first.
Okay, and who do you know the names of these two officers? Or deputies? We're talking about deputies, right?
Right. These are deputies. One of them was new, and he was a big old gangly kid, and I don't blame him at all because I could actually see, even when he came in and threw me down, I could see the... I mean, it pained him to do what he was doing.
And the other one?
The other guy was this big old guy that has always got an attitude, and I could tell that he was enjoying what he was doing. And that sort of pissed me off.
So they threw you down. And
so as soon as they threw me down, that made me mad.
And you say
now I'm pissed. Now I'm on the ground. Now, see, all they actually had to do was reach up, because I had my hands up. All they had to do was say, turn around, put your hands behind your back,
mm-hmm.
or reach up and if they wanted to be forceful, if they even, you know, wanted to be a little bit of an asshole about it, all they had to do was reach up, grab one hand, twist it a little bit, bring it around your back and cuff you.
Uh-huh.
That's all they have to do. That's all they had to do.
Right.
Instead, they threw me on the ground, started hitting me in the face.
So you had no verbal interchange before this with these people?
No.
Okay.
That made me mad when they did that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now I'm flat on my back. I got two cops on me, twice my size. They're beating me in the face. And so now I get pissed off.
How many times were you struck in the face?
Three times.
And where did they strike you?
Right, like on this side right here.
To the left side of your face?
Yeah, they've got pictures of me all beat up right
okay.
there.
Okay, and you've seen those photos?
No, the nurse saw them. The nurse insisted that they took pictures. The nurses, the head nurse down there at the jail was just furious with the sergeant. Oh, she was pissed. Chased him out of there and everything. Because they all, at that time,
her name?
I can't remember her name either.
Okay, but go ahead. So you were struck several times by these two officers.
Okay.
These two deputies.
Now I'm mad.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm actually pretty, you know, even with my rebellious streak, I'm pretty mellow type of person. I'm not the type of person that's going to throw blows or get physical until after you get physical with me.
Okay.
Once you do get physical with me, then I get a little frustrated. I'm still pinned on the ground. I've been hit in the face three times. Still, at this point, there's two guys on top of me. There's another guy holding my feet now. And then there's Officer Bowie that she comes in, and there's one other guy, girl actually, that's supposed to be videotaping, but she wasn't. She was standing outside of the unit and basically only had shots of their backs.
Okay, this is what you were told later.
Right.
Okay.
By my lawyer, saw the tape or whatever.
Name of your lawyer?
Jagarian or something like that. I'm out of that system now, so a lot of these memories...
No problem. So what happened next?
Okay. So that made me mad, and I have no recourse to do anything, so I get verbally, not even abusive. I don't call them names. I don't cuss at them. All I say is, you asshole, there's two of you holding me down, and you just beat me in the face three times. Mm-hmm. You know, and I said it as loud as I could because I wanted everybody to hear that.
Were there other people in other cells who
there
had heard
were other people that I, you know, so I wanted to get the message across.
Right.
So that's when Sergeant Bowie said, you know, shut up. And I said, and now I'm pissed because now she's telling me shut up. They're beating me. They're holding me down. All they got to do is roll me over and put cuffs on me, take me out of the cell. They're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know what? You are a lame ass bitch or something like that. And she laid in me with the taser. Now, there's no possible way that I could oppose any physical threat to any of them. I got a 6'4" guy on one arm. Okay, I'm only 130 pounds. I'm 5'6". I got a 6'4", 200 pounder on one side. I got a 6'4" something. He was a little skinnier, you know, probably 150 on the other side. I got another guy that was about that same size on my legs.
How far away was she from you when she tasered you?
She walked right up to me and tasered me. Zap!
She was very close to you.
Yeah, well, she instead of shooting the taser, they can shoot them
mm-hmm.
from a distance.
Right.
Instead, she decided to walk right up to me and touch the taser to the most optimal painful point that she
which
could
was?
Find, which was on the inside of my thigh.
Okay, and your response was to say,
you bitch, that hurts, I hate you.
Uh-huh.
Excuse my language.
Right. This is free radio. Go ahead.
So that made her madder, and she did it a couple of more times.
Okay, and then what happened?
Well, at that point, you know, I'm even though I'm small, I'm fairly healthy, you know, there's no possible way that I could have opposed any actual threat to them. The worst that I could have done was call them names, and so that's what I did. There was no reason for them to taser me. By the time I got tased the third time, they were still hitting me in the chest, wrenching my arms, wrenching my legs, basically torturing me. Mm-hmm. By the time 50,000 volts went through me three times, I've got big scars from them.
You want to show me a scar?
Yeah, I can show you a scar.
Okay.
I got to drop my pants.
It's going to get pretty exciting, folks. I wish you were here. Go ahead.
You know, by that time I was drained, you know, and, you know, I'm not old, you know, and I'm fairly healthy, you know, but they could easily kill someone who's on drugs. If they come in on meth, they hit them like that. If someone's freaking out because of mental disabilities, older people, when they treat people like that, they can kill them.
Now, you had heard that the same officer Bowie had a week later, and you think it might have been several weeks or several months later.
Well, because I'm really bad with time. I'm still recovering.
Tasered David Anthony Cross in a situation where he was alone in a cell with five or six other deputies, and he was tasered to death.
Right.
Or in essence, he died after got a heart attack after tasering.
They killed him.
You know, it was the same officer who did this?
It was not only the same officers, it was the same officer group. And
does that group have a name?
Well, it was whatever particular group was under they changed the groups around all the time.
Of this Bowie person.
Yeah, who was ever under control of Sergeant Bowie.
Now, you were then taken, did the nurse at this point come in and act like an angel and stop everything, or what?
No, they pulled me out of there, and I ended up where they wanted me, basically, which was in a lockdown cell in the rubber room.
With a mask on or not?
No, no mask. They strip you naked and put you in a rubber room.
I know that there's some cases where they have a restraining mask.
That's if you're going to bite them or if you're violent. I was not even violent. The next shift came on and said, "What are you doing here? This is ridiculous," because they knew me to be, you know, a non, you know.
Now, were you serving time? Were you awaiting trial?
No, I was fighting my case at that point.
So you were awaiting trial.
I was not convicted of any crime whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I was awaiting trial, and the only reason why they didn't have me out on my own recognizance is because I was homeless, and they don't let you out if you're homeless. They don't if you have a house to go to and parents or something like that that'll take you in, they'll let you out on your own recognizance. They wouldn't do that if you're homeless.
We're talking with James, not this man's real name. Someday he may go public with his real name. Who knows? And you're tuned to Free Radio. We've got about 3 minutes left in the show. James, because you couldn't come on earlier, I'm going to invite you to come back on Sunday morning or next week if you want to continue this discussion, although you've given us some of the meat of what happened. You haven't talked about you filed a complaint, as I understand, about the sergeant.
I filed several complaints. I filed a writ of habeas corpus. I filed complaints with their internal investigation service of the Santa Cruz County Police Department. But see, I'm dyslexic. I'm not getting any help. I don't have money for a lawyer. I have a record. I'm homeless, you know, even though I do work and I pay for my own counseling now. I'm getting off of, you know, I'm doing really well, actually. In reality, I'm digging myself out of the dirt. No help to the system, you know. I will say one thing about this whole situation. Judge Almquist was extremely reality-minded and very fair throughout the whole situation, and he should.
At what point did he get involved in this? Did you ever take this issue before a judge if you're being tasered? And this has never reached a judge, right?
No, because their internal investigation service never did anything about it, and
so you did file a formal complaint with IA.
Yeah, twice.
Two formal complaints.
Yeah, and then I filed again because they didn't respond for like 6 months, and then I haven't gotten a response for the response that I complained about them not responding. But, you know, I'm dyslexic. I can't, you know, I write something down, and you have to, it's difficult to decipher, you know, and I'm doing it on my own. I've been doing it on my own.
Sounds good, James. We have to go. I'd prefer to continue talking more on the subject. Plus, you know, you're welcome to come on also as a guest host with me to comment on other stuff that happens on the show. In case you're interested, we'll talk more about that. The show will be archived at huffsantacruz.org. Go there if you want to review some of the testimony you just heard from James or any of the other earlier shows. I'll be back on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning, and you can check me out then. I appreciate you being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Any final words, James?
Yeah, I would just like to say that our sheriff's department is the lowest paid sheriff's department in California. We basically have the bottom of the barrel. We've got, for the most part, the most corrupt and the most violent and the most devious people because our county won't pay any more money for anything good. All the good people that go through The police academy are applying and going other places. Personally, I think that what should happen is that the whole entire sheriff's department should be fired. We should pay them a lot more money because their job is hard and get good people in here and we wouldn't have those problems.
Amen. Amen. Thanks for listening. Thanks for talking, James. And hope you can come in again.
Bye-bye.
All right, man. And be back next time with another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides if you want. If you join me on Sunday, I'll be here if you will. In fact, even if you won't.
Many's the hour I've lain by my window and thought of the people who've carried the burden, who marched into strange fields in search of an answer and ended their journeys an unwilling hero. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. Back in the coal field of old Harlan County, some talked of a union, some talked of good wages, and they lined them up in the dark of the forest and shot them down without asking no questions. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. And over the ocean to the red Spanish soil came the Lincoln Brigade with their dreams of a victory, but they fell in the fire of Germany's bombing, and they fell 'cause nobody would hear their sad warning. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line,
and a toll of a bell for the next one to die. In old Alabama, in old Mississippi, two states of the Union so often found guilty. They came on the buses, they came on the marches, and they lay in the jails, or they fell by the highway. So here's a song to those who are gone, with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. This state, it was Texas, the town, it was Dallas. In the flash of a rifle, a life was soon over, and nobody thought of the past million murders, and the long list of irony had found a new champion. So here's a song to those who are gone, with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die.
What are you listening to? What are you listening to? Well, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is From the Cream to the Dregs. Music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I am Big Mama, the one that your mother didn't warn you about. And I'm covering tonight for Uncle Dennis, the one that Big Mama's going to warn you about. He's a great ball of fun, so be careful. Here we go with one of the songs that when I was Uncle Dennis's age, when he was listening to all the music that he plays often, this is going to be a song that I listened to when I was about that age from his era of time. There is a little bit of a generation or a time difference in our ages, Uncle Dennis and Big Mama, but we're not too far apart, and I did appreciate music that was coming out when he was a teen. But most of the music that you're going to be hearing that I'm going to be playing tonight will be from when I was a teen. I also have a guest DJ with me tonight, DJ Alley, and he will be spinning up some of his tracks. I'll let him introduce those when he comes to that. But for now, we're going to listen to an old Bowie piece, and this is Life on Mars. I hope you enjoy it. I think it was about me. Here we go. Oh, it would be good if I cued the song correctly. Life on Mars is off of one of Bowie's first albums, Hunky Dory, which he had appeared originally in wearing a dress. They didn't like the dress he was wearing, so they made him change the cover. And it was a man's dress, he claimed. It was a beautiful dress, and he should have been able to wear it. But it was too much of a gender-threatening thing for it to be released here in the States, so he had to change the cover. And that's just a little trivia, Bowie trivia for you. A little gender-bending Bowie trivia. Here we go with Life on Mars, one of my favorite Bowie tunes.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mummy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools if they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Take a look at the lawman.
tortured brow that Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog and clowns. But the film is a sad thing for, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again, and I ask it to those that come. Take a look at the old man, beating up the wrong guy. Oh man, wonder if he'll ever know who's in the best-selling show. Is there life on
Yes, is there life on Mars? And this next song is The Gene Genie, and I'm going to dedicate it to Robert Norris, who he just had a guest in here talking about being in jail. And it's kind of funny, this song I actually was listening to in a cop car on the way to jail, just because it came on the radio. And I realized that it was probably going to be the last cool song I heard for quite some time. So was the truth. Here we go with The Gene Genie.
Strung out on lasers and slashed back blazers, and ate all your razors while pulling the waders, talking about Monroe and walking on Snow White. New York's a go-go and everything tastes like poor little greenie. Get back on. Gene Genie lives on his back. Keeps all your dead hair for making up underwear. Poor little greenie.